What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. He's Kev. On today's show, Riverhounds head coach Dave Brandt drops by for a chat. We talk about the Hounds' upcoming game against Charleston, and we talk a little bit about the U.S. Copa America Centenario. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle, back to
All right, well, let's jump right into it. Welcome to the show, and welcome to the Pittsburgh, Coach Brandt. How are you settling in?
I'm not sure if settling in is even a question or an issue. I've been here for like 9 days. I'm not sure if my head's screwed on straight or where my clothes are and all this sort of thing, but honestly, it's been a great 9 days. It's just been super fast. It was a quick transition, but certainly happy to be here.
Do you have somewhere that you're staying, or is it like a hotel for right now? Or
yeah. Yeah, truth be told, I'm in a hotel. I'm fine. I'm not suffering. And I've done this before. My move from Messiah to Navy was not quite as quick, but also pretty quick, and came out on my own initially. My wife, Diane, is still in Annapolis now, dealing with some things there. But I'm in a hotel room, but working, you know, solid 14 hours a day wouldn't be a stretch. So I'm basically living at the stadium, which isn't a bad thing either.
Yeah. Wow. So hopefully, you know, things will slow down here at some point. And so you can have time to get more comfortable. There's been a lot of talk about you having a specific system that you'd like to play. And obviously, like you said, you haven't been here very long. What's the balance been like in trying to instill a new playing style or philosophy, yet still trying to win games in the short term?
Yeah. You know, so this is the first coaching job I've undertaken without having the benefit, you know, of a preseason, a build up to the season. And so, you know, I think it's a good question. It's totally fair. I think it is a balance. And I think that everybody needs to recognize that because I don't want to stay on the one end and not initiate change because that's the way I coach. And that's part of the reason I came here, certainly. On the other hand, right. It's not all about that. We're in the middle of a season here. One of the things I've told the guys daily almost is that, you know, a USL season, an MLS season, and an NASL season, a baseball season, whatever it is what I would call a marathon, not a sprint. Clearly, we haven't gotten out of the gates quickly. I mean, we know that. Everybody knows that. But in a marathon, that's not always who gets the prize, who wins the race, is who gets out of the gates quickest. And so, we're keeping that in the forefront of our mind. We know there's a lot of points left on the table. And I think the answer to your question in the end is to balance those two things, to make sure that I introduce new concepts at a rate the guys can absorb, understand, and improve our performance at the same time so that we can get results, so we can get points.
Yeah, that sounds great. And that's something that we've been trying to preach on the show is just patience. You know, I think that going into the most recent game, we were obviously hoping for a win, but also very understanding of a loss because it's a new coach, it's a
sure.
new system,
yeah.
Everybody's trying to learn. What did you take away from the last game that you think we can sort of build upon?
I would interject. I mean, I'll certainly answer your question, but what I would say right now is that what I think is going to happen here, what I hope is going to happen, and I'm working for directly, I do think people will see it, that there will be a noticeable difference pretty quickly in the way we're trying to play, hopefully in the entertainment and enjoyment factor, obviously in the results factor as well. But results aside, you'll start to see a change. But this is going to take time, and I do view it as a long-term thing. And I mean that in the best way, not in the worst way, like, I don't know if we'll figure this out in 2 years or whatever. We're going to figure this out, and I think we're going to give people a really compelling, entertaining team to watch, one that plays really compelling, entertaining soccer, gets results, is tough, is skillful, and just all the things that we all love about the game. That's why I'm here. I want to bring it to Pittsburgh. It's going to take some time. At the same time, it's not going to be a year before you notice a difference. That's for darn sure. We're going to get results. What did I take from the last game? Well, I mean, it was just so important for me to see us in a situation like that. And it was my first chance, aside from tape, with obviously me not having affected the guys yet in those games, just to see where we were and what was happening. And so after 4 or 5 days of training, to get that match in, and use that as a springboard this week. I mean, it was huge, and that'll continue to be the case as these weeks run off.
Yeah, there were a number of things that we noticed that we were specifically watching for, that it seemed that there were little moments where the team was definitely much more direct and the team was sort of moving as a unit much more than we had seen previously in the season. And so,
I think you're right. I think there were moments, and obviously the goal is to make that just overwhelm the whole game, and it doesn't become moments, it becomes the way we play in the whole game. You know, I agree that there were moments. I think the second half was better than the first half. Mm-hmm. I think the first 15 minutes were very difficult for the guys. But mm-hmm. those were the 15 minutes in this change where they were clearly thinking, trying to absorb this, trying to please the new coach, trying to do the right thing. And that goes back to your first question. I mean, that's difficult to do that and play New York Red Bull or anybody else. And so, you know, I do think we got over that. I think it's, you know, we're moving forward from here for sure. But, yeah, you know, I mean, you'll see us wanting to get the goal, but doing it skillfully on the ground and hopefully intelligently. And that's where I come off as saying, look, I think this can be great soccer that is both fun to play and fun to watch. And, you know, people shouldn't forget, I got to watch it too. You know, I got to watch more than – I got to get every game, I think that's in my contract. And so I've always felt that way. I've always wanted to be entertained. I don't want to watch boring soccer. I don't want to watch slow soccer. I want to watch skillful, exciting, attacking, intelligent soccer. That's what I want to bring here.
That's awesome and fantastic to hear. Changing gears just a little bit, there's a lot of hype surrounding Rob Vincent's return for one game. How is the team adjusting to having him back, and how much does it make it, or I should say, how does having players come and go, you know, also with the Columbus guys, impact how you grow and prepare the team week in and week out?
Well, Rob will be here later this afternoon, and so he'll train with us tomorrow. We'll have a light session, of course, the day ahead of the game. But I think, you know, you'll have this at the professional level. And so MLS, NASL, and USL teams all experience this for one reason or another, whether they're affiliated with another team or not. There's just going to be more turnover. And I think it's a thing that everybody understands, takes in stride. Clearly with Rob Vincent coming back, like, that's huge. That's a big plus. I mean, that's a legend in this organization. I think I can say that for sure. Guys, a person and a player with the guys and the fans respect, I think it's just a hugely positive thing. Like, we're looking forward to playing with us. At the same time, you know, it's not as if that's the answer. I mean, you know, Rob's with us for one game. You know, our guys are responsible for lifting their game and taking care of their end. On a day when Rob's back as well, he'll integrate and gel with us well, and we're looking forward to playing. But we certainly can't hang our hat on him because he's going to go back to D.C.
Yeah. Yeah, well put. We mentioned on Twitter that we'd be talking to you, and fans sent us questions. Josh Brokaw, a member of the Steel Army, asked, what differences surprised you the most from college to USL, at least in your, you know, short 2-week tenure here?
Yeah, to be totally honest, I hate to answer the question in a poor way, but I don't know that there's been anything. I mean, every situation is new, and so, of course, you know, I've got to figure some things out, and I haven't confronted some things, but that could be in any situation. That could be in a move from one college to another, one conference to another, one level to another, whatever. You know, for me, teams are teams. Players are players. Soccer's soccer, and I really do mean that. And I've worked with, you know, kids and college teams and trained lots of players, every age group, every level, that sort of thing. Perhaps I'm old enough to have seen most of it, if not at all. So, you know, and I think both at Navy and Messiah, we would fairly regularly in the spring season or in the preseason play pro teams. And so I've played pro teams in this country. I mean, I've already played the kicker this year. This spring with Navy, you know, played in the last couple of years. We play Harrisburg regularly. I've taken teams to Europe and played against top teams in Europe. And so, you know, it all feeds my contention that the game is the game and players are players. I guess the last thing I'd say about that is I've been, I guess, in a really positive way, like almost pleasantly surprised that I've been here 2 weeks, and I feel like that's true. They're great guys. I like them. They're good players. They all got to get better because we all have to get better, both individually and as a unit. So for me, it's more of the same, but I mean that in the best possible way.
It's fantastic. And finally, like I said, I know you're really busy, so I want to be respectful of your time. Saturday's obviously your first home game at Highmark Stadium. If, you know, you could give a pregame prep talk or some sort of message to the fans and the Steel Army, you know, what would that be?
I think it would be, you know, look, I know that you all have been through some tough times, though some really positive times too. And I know this season has been frustrating. You know, give us a chance. Like, we're coming. Like, we'll get better. We're coming. And no matter what happens Saturday, win or lose, we're going to need to get better yet. I'm fully aware of that. And there's going to be no lack of effort, intensity, energy, professionalism, and full effort directed at making this team a highly respected team in the league and beyond. And that's my ultimate goal. I mean, I always want to churn out what I call bottom line excellence, a high standard of performance, and earn respect. And you have to earn those things. And so every day, that's what has been driving me. That's what's going to drive me. And we are going to keep pounding until we get it right and put a team out here that people are just flat out proud of. That's the objective.
I heard you say two words in there that I think could be a catchphrase moving forward, and that's "we're coming." I think that's something that a lot of the fans can get behind and support, and I think that sort of instills some of the mentality that you've been talking about, and I think that's fantastic. So,
I've talked to the players too. I mean, we feel a burden for. Look, this is our responsibility now. Like, we've got to do better. This has got to become something great now. It's been too long, and it's time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for chatting with us. Obviously,
yeah, of course.
Best of luck this weekend, the rest of the season, and, you know, maybe we'll catch up again with you pretty soon.
Cooper, yep, thanks for talking.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
So we're coming, Kev. What do you think about that? We're coming.
Yeah. I mean, we talked, I think, previously about, you know, buying the snake oil. I've totally bought Coach Brandt snake oil. I was buzzing off of that interview. I mean, especially that last question, I think, you know, his message to the fans and everything. I mean, he just comes off as a really passionate guy. He comes off as a guy with a plan and someone who has clear ambitions, a clear path forward, a clear goal in sight, and has the utmost confidence to achieve that. And I mean, that's absolutely rubbed off on me as a fan, and I'm hoping that it rubs off on the players, and I'm sure it will.
I think one of the really interesting things is the way that he has stepped in and so quickly sort of seized ownership of the team, which you expect from a manager. But the fact that he's coming out and basically saying, like, this is our responsibility. Like, we're where we are because of who we are, and now it's our job to dig ourselves back out of it. He got here 9 days ago, but he's like, no, like, this is on me now. So we're gonna do this, and this is gonna be a reflection of me. And yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to sort of look back, you know, towards the end of the season and sort of see where things stand and see how it shakes out. Because I'm pretty excited, just like you are.
And I think it's easy for a new manager, a new coach to come in and completely fall back on that, like, you know, it's going to take time, quote. And even though he did kind of say, look, it's not going to happen overnight, but at the same time, he goes, like, this isn't going to take all season. Like, we're going to get going here, and this is, you know, we're going to play. The other thing I love, he was like, you know, we're going to play attractive soccer. He's like, because I have to watch it too. Yeah. Like, that's great. And so, I mean, you know, as a fan, that should only be a positive thing. So yeah, I'm positive. I'm excited and eager to see his imprint on the team.
Yeah. So thanks again to Coach Brandt for stopping by. Hopefully we'll talk to you here down the road and get some more thoughts, because it was definitely an entertaining interview. Let's switch gears a little bit. On Friday, the USA, which, you know, isn't exactly Riverhounds, but it's within the sphere, and we're benefiting from what's about to happen. The Copa America Centenario kicks off on Friday. the whole reason why Rob Vincent is going to be playing with us in this upcoming game is because MLS is taking a 2-week break for the Copa America. So we figured it's in the realm. We have an opportunity to talk about it. Let's talk about it. So USA kicks off on Friday against
Colombia.
Colombia, there it is.
I got you.
You got it. Thank you. So the squad, the USA squad was announced. There was a lot of controversy in it. Specifically, for those who follow MLS, a lot of people thought Jordan Morris, who is sort of the Seattle wonder kid, he graduated from Stanford. He went over and played in Germany, or he went on trial with the team in Germany, decided to turn them down, come back to MLS. Everyone thought he was a shoe-in. Like, you look at all of the posters with the new uniforms, Jordan Morris is there. He didn't make the team, but instead Chris Wondolowski's in the team. So
it's because he came back to the MLS. Ooh, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Geez. This happened. I wanted to talk about. So we're using the Copa America, I think, topic to talk about this theme that has been poking around my mind. We tweeted out some comment, I think, made by the Italian manager, now head coach at Chelsea, Conte, about how, like, you know, certain Italian players weren't selected for the Euros, and it's because they went off and, like, played in the MLS. And he says, well, if you go play in the MLS, like, you suffer from it. And so that just got me thinking about, okay, not necessarily for senior players, but as far as, like, youth development, in America, specifically in the context of the Copa America squad. And so the Copa America 23-man squad was announced, as we kind of alluded to there. And I looked, so there's four players under the age of 23 or younger, and all of them currently play in Europe. Three of them in Germany, one in America. Just reading them out, so the kind of starlet new hope. I feel like there's always, like, we always pin our hopes on one young American player.
In the World Cup, it was Julian Green, and now he's not on this roster.
Freddie Adu.
Like, yeah, years ago.
So the new one, Christian Pulisic, I'm going to say. 17 years old, plays for Borussia Dortmund in Germany. And actually, pretty interesting, too. I mean, he was, I guess, born and raised in Hershey, so kind of one of our own, which is pretty neat. So he's 17. DeAndre Yedlin, 22, on contract with Tottenham Hotspur in England. We have John Brooks, 23, who plays for Hertha in Germany. And Bobby Wood, 23 years old, and plays for Hamburg. So, I mean, there is, I don't know, especially, it got me thinking in the context of Pulisic. You know, he reaches 16, 17 years old, and then he goes to Germany to kind of really solidify that next step in developing himself as a soccer player. And so I thought about it in that context of, you know, how are youth American players, are they playing in America, are they playing in Europe? Obviously, these four players don't represent the entire youth development system in America, but I thought it was an interesting case nonetheless. And on top of that, when we look at, I think, the Riverhounds squad, I mean, all the names that come to mind haven't necessarily come up through the American youth system. I mean, I'm thinking Kevin Kerr bounced around in Europe a couple times. I mean, Romeo Parks before he left, you know, Jamaican international team. Sergio Campbell, Vargas, all these players, you know, kind of coming from all over the world. So I don't know. It's something I don't want to say I'm worried about, but I think something that if America wants to take that next step in becoming a player that should be respected on the world stage in soccer, youth development needs to be a serious thing that we need to look at and start putting a lot of time and resources and effort into. And so I don't know. So all of those things, mainly the two points of the 23-man Copa America squad, as well as the Riverhounds kind of nationality representation. What are your thoughts on just those two main points, if you have any?
No, this is going to turn into not just full circle, but almost like a Venn diagram, because I have a feeling this is going to suck in another topic that we've both been stewing over. No, I think that youth development is of the utmost importance, and I think that the U.S. has acknowledged it as such. And I think that within the context of the MLS, that's part of the reason why they try to limit how many international spots a team can have. You have to have so many players that are from the U.S. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. But in a lot of ways, that was sort of inhibiting the skill level that was in the MLS. But now the enforced partnership with teams in the USL allows that development to extend even deeper. And you start to have teams like Philadelphia, like New York, who are even LA. LA just opened a high school that is run by the Galaxy, where basically the high school students get training twice a day in addition to all of their studies, and they're still home the normal time from high school. And the idea is that you're taking these kids when they're even younger, and you're getting them into the system, and you make sure they're training the right way, you make sure they're eating the right things, and then they progress from the high school to something like the PDL, to something like the USL, to MLS, to wherever, whether they get sold abroad or whatever it may be. So I think that in some cities where you have that structure from bottom to top, it's advantageous to make sure that you're putting such a focus on youth development. Now, the Riverhounds have absolutely put an emphasis on youth development in that they have the youth academy. Every time you turn around, teams from the youth academy are winning tournaments left and right. The kids going into the academy and coming out of the academy are extremely skilled. But what we haven't seen yet is that translate to the first team.
Right, that pathway into the first team from the youth development squad, yeah.
And I think that it's interesting because if you're a team like the Red Bulls, okay, we'll just use them as an example because we just played them. For them, it makes sense to develop someone early, get them in the USL team, and then sign them at the MLS level because they could sign them to what's called homegrown contracts, where basically it's like any other club in Europe where if you develop somebody in your system, you just have them. But in America, we have the draft, and then we also have all of these weird systems for adding players to your teams where you have to be ranked above other teams in order to get dibs on them and all of those sorts of things. So the homegrown system is sort of a way to say, no, this kid we've brought up from the beginning, he doesn't have to go through the draft, he doesn't have to go through anything, he's one of us. So it's advantageous for a team like Red Bulls, like LA Galaxy, to start them young and move them up and through. The Riverhounds, on the other hand, are in a situation right now where we are there to basically win games. I don't believe, I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, you know, members of the Steel Army, anybody out there that's more knowledgeable about this than I am, obviously, let us know. But I don't believe there are many restrictions on the Riverhounds in terms of you have to have so many Americans on your team, you have to have all these things. I think at the USL level, it's more of, let's put together good teams to go out and compete and try to win championships. So it's for the Riverhounds, it's in their best interest to just put the best team on the field they can. And sure, if you're trying to bring a kid up through the academy system and you're trying to get them on your team, you may get somewhat of like a hometown discount when you're trying to sign them to the pro team. But otherwise, there's no financial incentive to pick somebody that is from the academy versus somebody that is from Ghana or Jamaica or who knows.
Which makes me wonder how much, I guess, effort the kind of hierarchy of the American Soccer Association is actually putting into this. How much effort thing like USL and MLS are actually working with the teams to help foster this youth development? Because it sounds like, I don't know, I would guess, and once again, please correct me if I'm wrong, those who are listening, I would guess that thing like the high school you just mentioned in LA and the things like the Red Bulls that are doing, I'm guessing these are club decisions.
Yes.
This is something where they said, you know, we identify that this is important to us, and so we're going to have to go and do it, which I don't think necessarily is a bad thing, but I think you could get a lot more out of Youth Development America if you have more support from the USL, MLS, and things like that.
I was just listening to another podcast we talked about a little bit before this called Men in Blazers, which for those of you who like soccer, they mainly cover the EPL. It's an entertaining look at the EPL. One of the hosts was just on a trip to Iceland, and he was talking about how he was blown away the investment that Iceland is making in youth development, in that every small town in Iceland now has a professional, it's like field turf pitch where anybody can play. But the other thing is that at the youth level, like the U6, the U8s, they have coaches who are qualified to coach, you know, U20 and college level, that are basically saying, no, I don't want to do that. I'm coaching these U6 and U8s, rather than having, and again, I coach U6, I coach U8, but it's oftentimes you have parents who aren't familiar with the game, and they sort of come in and they're trying to wing it. When you have somebody that actually knows what they're doing, there are substantial leaps that kids take between U6 and U10 if you just have the right motivation and you're teaching them the right skills, that ultimately just, it keeps filtering up the pipeline to the point where you have a massive talent pool, whereas before, that development was taking longer to happen. To your point, US is trying to do something like that, but it does very much feel like it's more of the clubs dictating the youth movement as opposed to US soccer in general.
I think it also has a knock-on effect, at least to us as fans. I mean, there's a reason why we get so excited about the Freddie Adus and the Christian Pulisic's. I mean, there's something exciting about, yeah, watching one of our own kind of go out there and be great. Like, and so I don't know. I would imagine, I mean, like I said, I would love to see more of a direct pipeline from the Riverhounds youth system integrated into the first team squad. And I would imagine if I'm living in LA or New York, there would be a special kind of excitement and eagerness for me to want to watch one of the players that have been at the club for since they were, you know, 10, 15 years old. I mean, that's great. They're part of, you know, they're part of the city. They're part of, you know, the area you grew up in, and they're part of they get the team, right? They weren't just brought in and have to settle in and all that kind of stuff. They've been around for a long time and they get it. If America is going to be a big hitter, I mean, and let's make no mistake about it, the U.S. has made a lot of really good progress in as far as competing on the national scale. But I think it's going to, if we really want to make that next jump, I think, investment in youth development systems is going to have to be a priority.
Yeah, I agree. And there have been, you know, there have been players over the years that have spent some time in the Riverhound system that have made their way up to the pro team, but it's not people who have seen consistent playing time yet. I think we're moving in that direction. Like I said, if you have teams that are constantly going out and winning tournaments and things like that, it's almost that trickle down effect where the Hounds will see the benefit of that at some point. But my only point was that I don't know if there is that financial incentive for them to do it as there is in, you know, the MLS or higher levels or in Europe. I mean, it's the same sort of thing.
And to kind of, I guess, put a cap on this and bring it back to our original point of the whole Copa America squad, youth players playing, all that kind of stuff. It looks like the U.S.'s last, I guess, friendly in preparation for the Copa America squad was against Bolivia. The U.S. won 4-0, and Christian Pulisic got the fourth goal with a nice kind of tidy finish. He made some space for himself around the 18-yard box and just kind of slotted it in the bottom right corner. So, yeah, I mean, things are looking positive. I'm positive about the U.S.'s chances in the Copa America squad. And, I mean, yeah, I'd love to see as many of the young players on the pitch as often as they can.
It's funny because the whole Christian Pulisic hype train, you know, every time the U.S. team gets together, it's who's the new young kid, let's hype him up. And everyone's like, no, let's not hype this kid up too much. And then the first game he came out and he made two people just look silly. I forget what team they were playing, but his touch is amazing. And then in the second game he goes off and scores. And it's like, ugh, you're making this difficult for us, kid.
And I'm not gonna make any better right now. I do have to say, you know, I follow European soccer. Borussia Dortmund are a very good team, and he's 17 years old, and he actually got, like, I want to say nine first team appearances for Borussia Dortmund, which is saying a lot. You know, they're easily like the second best team in Germany, and that's extremely hard to be the first when you have Bayern Munich in your league. And he's playing with world-class players. So he's training with them, playing with them, yeah, and it's only going to benefit him. So I hate putting too much hype and pressure on players, but let's do it again. Let's do it one more time, because he looks boss.
I was going to say, you know, Jordan Morris, who's not on this team, was dubbed as Stanford Messi. So, you know, let's just keep rolling with that. I think it was funny, I guess, that some people on Twitter actually were saying that that Pulisic reminded them a lot of a young Landon Donovan. And they said, oh, you know, maybe he could be as good as a Landon Donovan. And then there are people that are like, you know, how dare you cap his skill level at Landon Donovan? And it's like, well, you know, I mean, Donovan's probably going to go down as one of the best players in U.S. history, especially for the time period that he played. So it's, yeah, we're way off track here. But let's bring it back in.
It was a useful topic to talk about.
It's a useful topic, yes. We're going to start like a new side podcast where it's just Mike and Kevin rant about random soccer things happening. Yeah, that could be a good time. Anyway, let's talk about Charleston, you know. So Charleston come to town this weekend. But we don't really care that Charleston's coming to town, because Rob Vincent's coming to town. Yeah, as Coach said, he makes it back in this afternoon. Rob actually tweeted out a picture from the turnpike where, like, one side said Harrisburg and one side said Pittsburgh. And he said, which way am I supposed to go here? So he's definitely having fun with it. He'll have a day to train with the team, get back into the rhythm of things. For those of you who don't know, Rob was our leading scorer last year. Got picked up by DC United, so he now plays in MLS, which is the league above us. So far, he's played 6 games with them, mainly as a sub. No goals or assists so far. But yeah.
Has he made any appearances from the bench?
Most of them are from... he started 1 game. Okay. But the rest of the time he's come on as a bit of a super sub. So yeah, I mean, Kev, thoughts on getting him back for 1 game?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Coach Brandt addressed it well in the interview, saying, like, look, he's obvious, like, he means a lot to the club. He's a very talented player, but I mean, yeah, he's only going to get to train with him maybe 1 time, and it's good to know that, you know,
he says, like, a walkthrough, because it's the day before a game.
And the entire team will know. Yeah, if he goes out and scores a hat trick, like, that's great. But they can't, you know, obviously we can't rely on that game in, game out. So, I mean, yeah, it'll be great to see him. Maybe, you know, he could provide a little spark and help us get a win, which could potentially give us a platform to go then and you know, kick on for the next couple games. So it'll be good to see him. But at the same time, it's, you know, I don't know. Because you want to see other players develop under Coach Brandt in this, you know, short amount of time they've already been together. So I just hope he's not distracting too much from the rest of the team's development around what Coach Brandt is trying to do.
Yeah, I think it'll be great to see him on the field, but I agree that if he's on the field, that means that somebody else isn't, who needs that time to develop under Coach Brandt. So it'll be entertaining. You know, it'll be a lot of fun to have him back. It seems like he's really looking forward to it, so that'll be fantastic.
At the same time, I will say, I think one of the biggest problems we've had in the previous games is just kind of lack of confidence. I mean, so we saw that with, like, Herzog's mischance with the header in the last game, Russell's kind of mischance. So there's been a lot of, I think, clear-cut chances we've made for ourselves, but just haven't been able to finish. I think that's a confidence issue. And if anyone can kind of, I don't know, maybe give you another boost of confidence, it's Rob Vincent. So yeah. He could provide a nice boost in confidence. You know, if we can, I'm not going to put expectations on it, but if we can get some goals, you know, that could have a very positive effect on everyone in the squad that could potentially carry over into the next game. So,
Yeah, I agree. So this will be the second time that we played Charleston. We played them earlier in the season to a 1-1 draw. In that game, we got a goal from Romeo Parks. Charleston scored off a questionable PK. Basically, it was a corner kick. And as with every corner kick, there's pushing, shoving in the box right before it happens. I don't even think the kick was taken yet. And Hollingsworth pulled somebody down. The ref called it, gave them a penalty kick, and that's how they scored. So it wasn't even like, you know, they scored from the run of play. It was almost a gift from the ref. In terms of how they like to play, they are a counter-attacking style team where really all they do is they get the ball at the back and they knock it forward to really their one big forward, which is Romario Williams. Romario has 6 goals for the team this year. They just feed him the ball. To put it in perspective,
it's a good return. Yeah,
it's a good return. He has 6 goals, but the most goals on the team next to that is Justin Portillo with 2, and then there are 6 players with 1 goal each. So aside from Portillo, Williams has as many goals as the rest of the team combined. So the idea is if you can shut him down, you know, you have a pretty good shot of at least getting a draw or keeping them scoreless, potentially getting the win. So again, from what we remember, it's a lot of quick long balls out of the back over the top. Romario gets the ball. He tries to hold up play for everybody else to catch up, and then he just needs to be fed. So I think in terms of, you know,
how do you think you counter that?
How do you counter that? I think you counter that in 2 ways. I think one is with possession in the midfield, so you don't let them get the ball to then play it over the top. And 2, I think you pressure their defense. I think if we play a high press, then that's causing their defense to not have time to lift up their head and knock the ball up to him. And we also saw they're not very good under pressure. So if you put pressure on them, they're going to choke the ball up. Or many times they just kick it out of bounds because they don't know what to do with it. And so just put the high press. I mean, this is like the perfect time for Coach Brank to come in. Put the high press on their defense, cause them to choke it up, win the second ball, and maintain possession through the midfield.
Yeah, I absolutely second that. Yeah, I mean, the best way to stop a target man is stop the supply to him.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the only way you do that is press them and not let them get the ball high at the pitch. And yeah. So hopefully we can do that.
We're making it sound like it's easy, but, you know, Charleston currently sits 4th in the East. So they've played 11 games. We've only played 9. But over that time, they're 5-3-3, so they're on 18 points. Since we played them last, they lost to Rochester 2-3. They beat Harrisburg 3-2. They beat Toronto 2-0. They beat Wilmington 1-0. And then they lost to Louisville 2-0 in their most recent game. So they've put together a few wins where they've also put in some goals. I guess, Kev, what do you expect from this game in terms of how do you see this shaking out on the field?
Just looking at their last 5 games there, it's kind of interesting. I mean, it seems like they're beating the teams you would kind of expect them to beat and then losing to the teams that you would expect them to lose to. Which, I mean, given table suggestions, would suggest they beat us. But, I mean, yeah, I really think...
But we're coming, Kev.
Well, but exactly. And this is exactly what I was just going to say. I really think this is, you know, I think, it's an exciting time for the Riverhounds. I think I'm super excited to see Coach Brandt's side. And yeah, for the short reasons we just gave about how to maybe play against this team, I think it can line up quite nicely against Coach Brandt. I think the atmosphere, hopefully, will be bouncing at Highmark with the new coach and Rob Vincent being back. So that's not going to be made. It's not going to make things any easier for them. And the other thing, as I mentioned last week, you know, I think you were talking about what I like to see. I think over the coming week in preparation for this game from the players. And my response back then was just kind of more of the same, but better understanding of what they tried last game. And I think they're obviously going to get that with another week on the training pitch with Coach Brandt. So we started to see some of his imprint on the last game. And I think we'll see that same level of what he's trying to do, just executed better this week. I fully expect a positive result. And I guess if we want to just jump into predictions.
Pin it down. Go for it.
I'm gonna say 3-1.
3-1.
I'm gonna say 3-1.
Does Rob Vincent score?
Yeah, absolutely he does. And so, and I think the reason why we
no,
get three
no
is
hesitation, none at all, absolutely. No.
Absolutely does. And so I think it's, look, when you have a good player in your side who can score goals, obviously you have that threat from them just as a baseline. But on top of that, then the defense has to worry about occupying that player more, which just leaves more space for the rest of you. And so the more they need to focus on Vincent, the more holes are going to open up in other areas. And so, yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if you would ask, you know, Charleston, you know, do you want to play the Riverhounds right now? And the answer is absolutely no. This is probably the worst time to play us in this entire season so far. We got the bounce from the new coach. He's had now around 2 weeks on the training pitch with them, and we're getting our best player back from last season.
And this is his first home game. So, yeah, like, the exactly. fans are going to be out there getting ready to see yep. him for the first time. Ron Vincent's there. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so.
I'm going to say 3-2, and the only reason why I'm giving Charleston an extra goal is we saw it in the last game, and I think we're still going to be trying to figure this out a little bit, where we're trying to figure out the press, and that's going to leave some gaps in front of the defense where we're going to be scrambling. And it seems like Romario Williams is the type of player that if he finds a gap, he's going to try to exploit it. So I think that Willie Hunt, Sergio Campbell, I think they're going to do a good job of winning the first ball against him and shutting him down. But I don't know if we're not going to have mental breakdowns at some point during the game as we're still trying to figure out the system. So I'll give them an extra goal. I'll say that they get two. But I think that the emotional lift of having Vincent back, of being in front of the home crowd, playing attractive soccer, I think that's going to give us the edge. And so I'm going to say 3-2. So as we said, the game is Saturday at 7 p.m. For those Pittsburgh fans, guess what? The Pens are playing against San Jose at 8 o'clock, and the Pirates are playing at 4:05 at PNC Park. So bear with me. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the Pirate game at 4:05, okay? It's Fedora night, so everybody get your free Pirate Fedora. After that game's over, you walk across the bridge, okay? I guess you actually walk across two bridges, and you go to Highmark Stadium. Take pictures at Highmark with your fedora. Give Coach Brandt a fedora. That would be amazing to see Coach Brandt on the sideline with a fedora. Stay for the Riverhounds game. Get in the car. You're home before the third period starts for the Pens, and you get to see all the action as they try to come back against San Jose, because I think San Jose is going to go up with this game because it's back home. So this could be like the perfect Pittsburgh sports night. You go from PNC Park, which has amazing views of the city. You then walk across town to get views from the other river, the other side of the city. You cheer on the Hounds, and you're back home in time to watch the Pens play in San Jose. Perfect.
What a Saturday.
Perfect.
What a Saturday.
Perfect. That's what we're doing.
Hopefully the weather cooperates now.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me. The other thing to mention is that it's military and first responder night at Highmark Stadium. So military, police, firefighters, EMS, you all get $5 off tickets. And the Hounds will also be unveiling a permanent tribute to prisoners of war and those missing in action during halftime. It's basically a chair of honor that represents that, you know, even though POWs and MIAs aren't here, there's still space for them. So it'll always remain unoccupied as a tribute to those, who have served and have been lost. So yeah, it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be an exciting game. Make sure you get down to the stadium. I have a soccer picnic in the morning and then a birthday party in the afternoon. And then I'm just going to pack the family up and just say, we're going. I don't really care. We're going. So, yeah, it's going to be a great time. I guess, Kev, anything else about this game, about the interview, about anything else we talked about?
I'm excited. I'm excited for all this to unveil over the weekend. That's all I got.
Hashtag we're coming.
Hashtag we're coming.
Yeah. You like rolled your eyes at that. I love it.
No, I didn't. I was like, I'm just.
I think it wasn't we're coming. It was the hashtag portion of it that you're like, yeah. Hashtag.
Yeah, maybe a bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not big on the Twitter
sphere. I wanted something a bit wittier to say, but I had nothing and I wanted to follow up quickly. So
the eye roll was for yourself.
I was disappointed.
Way to go, Kev.
On my part. Poor performance on my part.
You shanked it off the crossbar. Head in your hands.
Hard hook.
For crying, Kevin, I'm Mike. Let's get it done.
Please let's not make that. a nickname.
Crying Kev. Yeah, we won't make that a thing. All right, we got to get out of here. Rhett Hounds, go get it done this weekend. Everybody enjoy the game. Get down to Highmark Stadium, and we'll see you there. So we'll talk to you real soon.
Cheers.